If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everybody. Trish Wood on the Fringe. Michael P. Sanger is coming up in a couple of minutes for the full hour, and I'm so happy about that. I've been following him very closely. He is one of the, at least in my view, most important heretic, COVID heretic voices of the past 2 years. He's a big thinker. He understands very well China's role in what happened. He wrote a brilliant book called Snake Oil, How Xi Jinping Shut Down the World. And he's been researching like mad and probably knows more about it than anybody, except maybe the spooks in D.C., but they're not talking because it doesn't serve that particular government's agenda right now. So just stick around. I just wanted to do a couple of updates for you on more things that have been happening. So this week, another event that really makes me wonder about Canadian democracy and our judicial system here. I know the Steve Bannon thing in the States is upsetting, but this is also upsetting. There's a bunch of lawsuits that were brought about by mandates in this country. Our prime minister is vaccine happy. He's a vaccine extremist, as most people in the world know by now. And so some good people who had a problem with that filed some lawsuits, and a whole bunch of them were just thrown out this week. So this is from Sean Ricard and Carl D. Harrison. They were the ones who had the lawsuit that gave a reporter named Rupa Subramania, who I have on the show frequently, the documents that showed that in ordering the mandates, the travel mandates in this country, the prime minister was not relying on science, which of course he wasn't, because the science didn't back up what he was doing. Nothing about the pandemic was based on actual science, despite what they may say. So they had a lawsuit, and apparently it has been struck down as being moot. And actually, I'm sure Patrick, although he's an American lawyer, could weigh in on what that means. I think it means that the thing that was happening that caused you to file the case no longer exists, so it's moot, right? I think that's what it means. But also lawsuits by Brian Peckford, who is one of the founders of our civil rights package here. He's the last living member of it. He had a lawsuit, and Maxime Bernier were also struck down by the mootness motion. Yikes. So let me just say why this is important. I don't want to be too kind of archaically legal about it, but here's why it's important. When all of these things were happening to us during COVID-19, and we were getting more and more depressed, nobody was coming to save us from these wildly overreaching public health officials, many of whom I just think didn't know what the heck they were doing. I mean, it's clear they didn't know what they were doing. Everything they did made it worse. In Ontario, Canada, where I live, our premier basically abdicated his authority as premier and said, no, I'm not making those decisions. The public health officials are making them, right? So imagine that. So what happened was public health officials who saw their role as viral suppression and viral suppression only were instituting policies that they actually in the end didn't really suppress the virus, but they thought they were, but to the detriment of other problems that they were creating, collateral damage, right? It's like the old Vietnam line about we had to destroy the village in order to save it. So what public health was doing here and around the world in many places was ruining people's lives, literally killing people with bad public health policies in order to suppress the virus. That was their role. And because people like the Premier of Ontario, Premier Ford, had abdicated because he is a coward, he didn't do what Ron DeSantis did, which was actually figure out how the virus worked and what the numbers were. And then he had the guts to stand up to media and say, well, wait a minute, that's not working. We're going to do it this way. Many, many politicians around the world just caved to the scientists, so-called scientists and public health officials who were caving into groupthink. That is what happened. So I know that's a roundabout way of getting to my point, which is, so what do you do as a citizen if that is happening to you, right? What constitutionally, what levers can you pull to get relief, right? You voted in a politician who's handed over his power to public health. They're ruining your life and making a hash of things. What can you do? Well, what you do is you go to court, right? So, and apparently that has failed as well. So I'm just going to read from what Sean Ricards and Carl Harrison versus Attorney General of Canada, what they wrote when they put this note out about the moot decision killing their lawsuit. Today we received the judgment of Assistant Chief Justice Jocelyn Gagné in relation to the motion by the Attorney General to dismiss our case as being moot. Justice Gagné has agreed with the Attorney General that the issues are moot and has dismissed the case. She has also dismissed the three other cases, including the applications by Maxime Bernier, who is head of the People's Party of Canada, and Brian Peckford, one of the founders of our Bill of Rights. This does not mean that the court has made a judgment against our challenges. Justice Gagné has simply refused to hear the pleadings or to look at the evidence. So she did not make a judgment that their lawsuit was without merit. She didn't do that. She made a finding that it was moot because the mandates had been stopped, at least for now. But here we go. You know, the Prime Minister is making noises like he wants to get them going again. So it would have been nice to have that judgment. Sometimes I just feel so frustrated here. I feel that COVID-19 and COVID-19 tyrannical policies have really exposed how we do not live in a democracy, how media is absolutely corrupt, which obviously I covered with Vanessa Beale on Foreign Affairs, but boy, on COVID, it was a nightmare. I mean, it was an absolute, they were just lying about things or not putting things in context, and they certainly weren't doing the thing that media is supposed to do. They should have been holding public health to account by saying, well, if you close the schools, that's really going to be harmful to children. So is there actually a medical reason for closing the schools? They didn't do that. They were all, media was all screaming for them to close the schools because that's what the teachers wanted. So, you know, this is not good. And I can't go through another year of that. I really can't. If, you know, this Ontario, Canada is one of the worst. We had one of the longest lockdowns, longest school closures of any place in the world. And we are battered and bruised. So you may wonder, well, how did the lockdowns even come to be used as a tactic in the war against the COVID virus? And Michael P. Senger knows a lot about that. So let's just pick up with him right now. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Great, Trish. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that terrific introduction.
Oh, well, I am an admirer. I should have, you know, we should have spoken ages before this, but things just kind of get in the way, don't they? But I do,
yeah,
I will
absolutely.
Say, I know, and I do follow your Substack, and I certainly followed your Twitter. Are you back on Twitter, or are you like in no man's land?
I'm not. I'm still permanently banned off Twitter, which is really just, you know, egregious. Given everything that goes on social media, you know, my stuff is so well researched. It's been cited by multiple sitting senators here in the United States. It's really just so meticulous. I mean, anybody can vouch that, you know, when you go through my book, Snake Oil, How Xi Jinping Shut Down the World, which you described earlier, which now the best-selling book about the dictator of China on Amazon, which is, you know, pretty heady to think about. But, you know, the book has nearly 600 citations in it. You know, I'm an attorney by training as well as an auditor. Yeah. You know, everything I do is just extraordinarily meticulously researched. And it's really, it's insulting to be kicked off of Twitter, and it's meant to be. Fortunately, you know, I've been able to pick up without too much that interfering. Fearing too much with the quality and sort of reach of my work, because, you know, now I'm on Substack. MichaelPSanger.substack.com is where folks can find
me. Good. Yeah, good. Well, I mean, you're in good company, right? I mean, Martin Kulldorff was kicked off and Jay was kicked off. Right. I mean, all the good people, you know, and it's quite interesting because it actually is all the good people. You know, I see lots of stuff on Twitter where I'm like, oh, that's weird. But the stuff, I remember once there was a Ron DeSantis had held some type of Great Barrington Declaration Roundtable, and it was taped, videotaped, and put on Twitter. I thought, wow, you know, here is a sitting elected governor and two or three really well-credentialed scientists making a perfectly logical case, whether you agree with focus protection or not. I happen to think it's the solution, but there was nothing misinformation-y about that, and they pulled it down. Like, I just couldn't, I thought, wow, that is really extreme behavior, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it really just shows the links, the depths that the powers that be have stooped to in trying to, you know, maintain support for this disastrous response to COVID. You know, from the very beginning, censorship was so central to that response, from the initial lockdowns to the mask mandates to vaccines, especially, you know, censorship has been played a whole massive role in, you know, drowning out any opposition to these policies. And frankly, you know, kind of turning the world into China in the process, which what's especially insulting and, you know, galling about the fact that they censor my work is because the focus of my work is entirely on China's role in the response to the pandemic, the role of the Chinese Communist Party in influencing the response, these authoritarian policies, such as lockdowns, mandates, and, you know, vaccine passes. Which, I mean, you'd have to just be blind not to see that there was something a little bit off about these policies. And so my work has all been very forensically focused on what is the influence of the Chinese Communist Party on all of these policies. And you'd think that that's something that you would think that our governments would be interested in that. That
wouldn't
they
you?
Would,
yeah.
you know, having spent years compiling all this research, you know, free of charge, you'd think that that would be something they would find valuable. Instead, you know, they go out of their way to censor me, and it's really sort of galling, you know, the degree to which their narrative has converged with that of what is really the world's largest and most dangerous criminal network, the Chinese Communist Party. And I think that tells you some pretty disturbing things about our government's priorities.
Well, does it ever, you know, and Biden's had his mitts in China and in Ukraine. So I don't even want to think about the level of corruption at play here. But let me just ask you something that's not COVID related necessarily, but it's just, I saw it and I wanted to ask you because you're kind of a China hand. The removal of Xi's predecessor, did you see that footage?
Not sure.
There's a video that came out yesterday. You might not have seen it yet. It was a video that came out yesterday, and it was all over. Well, it was all over Twitter, right? Which you're not on anymore. Maybe that's why you didn't see it. But it was the Chinese Communist Party Congress. They're all sitting, and you know, in these elevated rows, stratified rows. It, quite interesting because the party people behind the front row were all masked, and the front row was not masked where Xi was sitting. But his predecessor, at one point in the meeting, was actually physically removed from the meeting, and nobody has any idea why or what happened. It was just this strange thing. There's a lot of gossip about it today about what might have happened to this guy. It was just a really, really strange thing to do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that until just now. Yeah.
Okay, well, you can Google it when we're done. Yeah, it's but the image of the masking there really was so apropos to how I see the whole thing, you know, especially coming from the Communist Party there. Everybody's wearing a mask, all the little apparatchiks are wearing a mask, and the guys at the front, all men, except there's one woman there, are mask free. I mean, it's exactly what they're doing to us. But let's get into what I really found fascinating, and that is your work around how we came to lockdown, and you're tracing it directly to China. And also, just as an aside, I want to know more about, I remember the bots that were pushing lockdowns on Twitter, and I remember those videos that were clearly fake as hell, but everybody was freaked out by them. So just tell me your story about the beginning of China's response, what it was, and how we got kind of almost suckered into doing what they were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So for over 2 years now, I've been researching and writing about China's role in the response to COVID-19. And when you go back, you actually see China's paw prints on every single one of these policies from the very beginning, from our initial impressions of the virus, as you said, with his fake videos, to the lockdowns, to the mask mandates, to the censorship, to the vaccine passports. Every single one of these, and the mass testing, the horribly flawed mass testing, and the attempts to trace the virus, just all these horrifically flawed containment policies. If you go back, you find China's paw prints on the origin of every single one of these policies. So the focus of my work is really on the importance of everything that's transpired over the last 2+ years. So if you think back to what happened in March of 2020, when the world initially shut down, you go back and you take yourself back to that moment. What happened is that liberal democracy ground to a sudden stop. As suddenly governments across the world, one after another, starting with Italy, then going across Europe, and eventually Canada and the United States, they all implement these total lockdowns based on the mass quarantines that have been imposed in China, the unprecedented lockdowns, which everybody was so horrified by when China first did it in Wuhan in January 2020. But now governments across the world, like dominoes, they all tip over and do these lockdowns. Now, if you're like me, like I had been following the COVID numbers and they just weren't that worrying. Even back then, the numbers made it very clear, if you followed the Diamond Princess cruise ship, the virus was not especially dangerous to young people. Statistically, it just was not anything to be that worried about. But for the powers that be who were shutting the world down, that just didn't seem to matter. And what's even worse than that is that they were throwing, the world's poor under the bus. There are food lines everywhere across the developing world. You had these, just mass exodus of people who just had absolutely no idea where they were going to go. A statistic later showed that 5% of the population of the United Kingdom, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, 5% of the population of the United Kingdom went hungry during lockdown. But that didn't seem to matter either to the powers of the who had somehow had the power to implement these lockdowns in country after country across the world. And very, very few countries actually stood up to it. It was really, in the developed world, it was Sweden and really not others that sent out to this horrifying policy, which, at the end of the day, it's now been clear did not work to slow the virus in any meaningful manner and had just horrifying effects, a mental health crisis. It caused, massive famine with those huge, exoduses and food lines that we saw in the developing world. Even here in the United States, statistics on excess deaths have now shown that, over 100,000 Americans were killed by these lockdowns, just the deprivation that was caused by lockdowns and the stress and the, drug overdoses and sort of mental health collapse that was caused by that. And yet, despite all those horrifying consequences, which were well known at the time, it was well documented that at the time they implemented these lockdowns, they knew that all these things were going to happen. They knew that children were going to suffer. They knew that people were going to die from the deprivation of it, that it was going to cause, hunger in the developing world, that it would cause child abuse in the developed world, that the poor would suffer the worst of all. They knew all that. And not only did it not seem to matter, but the media was prohibiting all debate about these policies, which were literally killing people. The media was prohibiting debate about what really amounted to mass murder. And the story was that it was because, it's for the best, it's that sort of utilitarian argument that, that's all worth it because you're going to prevent this virus. Well, I mean, but now we know it didn't work. So you're pretending debate about this murderous policy that ultimately didn't work. That's pretty galling to actually go back and think about.
I know it is. My blood's boiling just listening to you. I want to get into another idea connected to what you just said, and that is this. That is, so the I want a description of what the Chinese did too, because I understand it was extreme. But also, how did they get the idea to do it? Like, we got the idea from China. How did China come across that? So let's talk about that in a minute. I will be back with Michael Singer, who wrote a great book called Snake Oil about China's influence into the COVID-19 public health policies here. So we will be back in a moment.
You should hear what Mike Ryan's talking about.
Australia's first public IVF clinic is set to open in Melbourne, providing the country's first ever free fertility treatment for those having difficulty falling pregnant. Okay, there's a big baby drought. Now, fancy that, a baby drought. Oh, my God, I'm a terrible person. I'm putting one and one together and getting two. Perhaps the vaccines have done terrible things to people's reproductive organs and the whole system. Now, we do know, according to Dr. Elizabeth Fleet, and they did a study in China, that what the vaccine does, it affects the reproductive organs such as testes, ovaries, and of all things, placenta. And they encourage people, encourage those that were pregnant, get the vaccine, you'll be all right. BS, you will be held accountable. You are terrible, terrible liars. You do not know because we're still in a trial.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The ones that matter most are the children. There is a special place in South Dakota, a place of hope, love, safety, and opportunity for Native American children. This place is St. Joseph's Indian School. Here, we preserve traditions, provide Lakota kids a safe place to learn, attend to the mind, body, heart, and spirit of every child in our care.
As a father, I feel very good about leaving my kids here, and they have way more opportunities here.
I can come on campus and I can feel the good vibes, and the children, they can really grow.
Together, we are giving Lakota children brighter futures and a proud connection to their past. To learn more, go to helplakotakids.org. today.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free
from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Trish Wood here, and you are on The Fringe with me and also with Michael Singer, one of the smartest, I call them heretics, heretical COVID voices. And we were just talking about the lockdowns because the kind of the etiology of them is really interesting. You wrote a piece, Michael, in 2014, and it's called Template to Export Lockdowns in 2014. And you're talking about Ebola lockdowns in Sierra Leone and Liberia. I never even knew about them until I read this piece. Tell me that story and how it has relevance to what happened later with China and then the West.
Yeah, so like you, I've been researching this topic so intently for over 2 years now. And like you, you know, I never really thought too much about those lockdowns in Sierra Leone and Liberia during Ebola. You know, that seemed a little bit odd, and people had mentioned it in passing that they were an example of how these countries had done lockdown. It didn't work, but I never really thought too much about it until I was researching social media activity on about lockdowns prior to 2020. Now, this policy of lockdown, first of all, going back to the spring of 2020, the entire world, you know, one country after another follows Italy. Suddenly all of Europe and then Canada and the United States implement these draconian lockdowns based on, you know, what China had supposedly done to eliminate the virus in Wuhan. And this policy actually, and a lot of people still don't know this, that this policy actually had no precedent with the Western pandemic plans. It flew in the face of everything that we had learned about epidemiology throughout the 20th century. This idea of mass quarantines, of stopping events. The last time it was used during the Spanish was during the Spanish flu and didn't work at all. It was all completely debunked by 20th century epidemiology. It was proven that it didn't work. That epidemiology in the latter part of the 20th century focused on herd immunity, letting young, healthy people go about their lives and develop immunity so that the virus fizzled out. And that was so successful that the epidemics in the latter part of the 20th century, like the Hong Kong flu of 1968, 1969, the same year that Woodstock happened, people didn't even know there was a major epidemic going on, but there actually was. But that strategy of herd immunity was so successful, people didn't even realize that. But suddenly in the early 2000s, there's this push for this, there's this new push to bring back this concept of lockdown, which had been so thoroughly discredited in the 20th century. It's really a medieval policy. And there's some precedent for it within the Middle Ages in Europe. There's some records of people using it in response to the plague, in response to various epidemics in the medieval times. You know, it always never really worked, and then it was proven in the 20th century that it didn't work. But one instance in which we see this policy come back in a big way is in Liberia and Sierra Leone, both very, very poor countries in West Africa. But if you go back and look at social media activity, you find that as soon as those lockdowns in Siberia, in Liberia and Sierra Leone begin in 2014, social media is just inundated with millions and millions of tweets, all in identical language, promoting Sierra Leone and Liberia's lockdowns. And what's so interesting about that is that very few people, just a tiny, tiny percentage, I'd say less than, I think it was less than 3% of people in Liberia and Sierra Leone in 2014 had any access to the internet. So these posts were not organic posts, and they all have, you know, zero likes. There's very little real activity around Sierra Leone and Liberia. But we have this big problem in the modern age of social media disinformation. And one big way that they do this is that regimes and, you know, massive organized crime networks like the Chinese Communist Party, the world's worst totalitarian regime, has just these massive armies. They have tens and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who work full-time just posting on social media, posting disinformation on social media. So in 2014, when Liberia and Sierra Leone go into lockdown, and this is a policy that had no precedent in Liberia and Sierra Leone, we actually have no idea where their officials got the idea to do these lockdowns during Ebola. They haven't said. But what we do know is that we see millions and millions of these tweets during that time promoting this concept of lockdown in Liberia and Sierra Leone. They're posting these photos about the entire country went into lockdown. I mean, really, really horrifying for the people in those countries. You can only imagine a country as poor as that. Everybody's shut into their homes, and there's these pictures of all these empty streets as the government implements these unprecedented lockdowns. So as far back as 2014, we know that somebody was trying to export this policy of lockdown. And where did that concept, that idea, because all these tweets specifically use the word lockdown very specifically.
Yeah, very interesting. Where
did
interesting.
They get that idea?
Where did it they get
from,
it?
It all comes from China. This policy of lockdown goes back even farther than that in China. We have records of China using these lockdowns. They use it periodically in response to epidemics in 2001, 2002. Why China, when it was this concept of mass quarantines and lockdowns was so thoroughly debunked in the 20th century? Because China didn't have much contact with the Western world throughout the 20th century. For most of that century, during Chairman Mao's era, you know, one of the worst tyrants in history, we were at war with China, you know, during the Cold War. So this this medieval policy, this feudal policy of lockdown got grandfathered into policy like many of the other much of the other Chinese Communist Party's policies just come straight from the Middle Ages. Just got grandfathered into policy and kind of rubber stamped as the policy of the Chinese Communist Party, their go-to policy response to epidemics. So then in early 2020, January 2020, the fact that the Chinese Communist Party periodically does these lockdowns is not meant to diminish the fact that what Xi Jinping did in Wuhan in January 2020 was very much unprecedented. You know, because the draconianness of that lockdown in Wuhan, you know, there was those images of welding people into their homes. I mean, stuffing, you know, taking 50 million people in that province and stuffing them into their homes. I mean, it's absolutely horrifying. And, you know, everybody's saying,
and
oh,
is that real?
Violation of human rights.
Was that real?
The lockdown was real. No question. The, you know, the horrifying things that residents in that area had to experience and the lockdowns that are happening now in China are real as well, but it's also theater. And it's theater meant for domestic and international consumption. to convince people that this concept of lockdown really worked. That essentially, you know, communism, the entire communist system in many ways is propaganda. And so they're using human beings as props with this lockdown to prove that this concept of lockdown really works, to both to convince their own people that, yeah, this is this big victory against this virus, and to convince this world, the entire world, that this concept of lockdown worked. Because then a month later, after Xi Jinping shuts down Wuhan in January of 2020, we get these reports, the World Health Organization, which everyone knows, it's well known, you know, even that time, that they're in the pocket of the Chinese Communist Party. They're the first ones who report back from Beijing on February 24, 2020, and tell the entire world, what China has demonstrated is you have to do this. They have successfully fought back this virus by welding everybody in. Like, who knew after all these centuries that welding was the key to fighting respiratory virus the whole time? Just absurd, completely absurd lie that you can eliminate a virus from an entire country by shutting down one city for 2 months. But that's the lie. WHO rubber stamped in a global policy.
Yes, they did. And I actually interviewed a moderately famous mathematician and his wife about the disaster that the modeling was. And they told a story, and it might be a story you know, but there was some like Antarctic mission or scientist somewhere, and they'd been there for ages, and one of them caught a virus that couldn't actually be there, but was there. Like that's just what viruses are like, right?
They can harbor within people and come up, and completely isolated populations in Antarctica months later. We've known that for a long time. That's why this idea of mass quarantines was so thoroughly debunked in the 20th century. It's just, you know, we don't know why viruses crop up in completely isolated people, but we know they do. This idea of lockdown is complete medieval pseudoscience, but suddenly the world's highest, you know, public health body is rubber stamping this policy, and the entire world is adopting it just based on that one just utterly ridiculous claim that China somehow eliminated this virus by shutting down one city.
And so I just want to go back to, this is so fascinating for me. I absolutely love this stuff because it doesn't give you the answer, but it puts some of the pieces of the puzzle together. I think your Sierra Leone and Liberia story is really interesting because of this bot campaign. How do you explain that these African countries fighting Ebola, they lock down, and all of a sudden social media is swarmed with the same kind of fake bot campaign that swarmed social media when COVID-19 hit in support of the Chinese lockdown? Who is behind the lockdown bot storms?
Is it
World Health Organization, or who is it? Who is the bot storm people?
Yeah, I mean, we can't say for sure. We know that the Chinese Communist Party maintains the largest, active army of, social media disinformation workers. Most of that is geared domestically, but in the last few years, there's no question that they have, directed that towards international websites as well, international media networks. And, all these websites are blocked in China. That's the irony here, is that, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, they're all blocked in China, but the Chinese Communist Party still maintains these massive disinformation networks on these platforms, and the platforms really don't do anything to really combat it. I think it is very telling that going all the way back to 2014, you see these millions of bots specifically promoting the word lockdown. That's not a policy that any Western country used. It was not in our pandemic plans. It was not, had no precedent in the modern Western world. They're all specifically using the word lockdown, which is only used in China. And that's just like the bots that stormed every single country and dialects across the world. That was my first article on this topic, was tracking these bots who had just stormed every single country and every single language and dialect, and essentially the same language translated, using the exact same verbiage translated in every language and dialect in the world, had stormed all these countries and all these world leaders to implore them to adopt this policy, specifically in the word, again, lockdown, the Chinese term.
We don't technically know
where those bots came from, but somebody was trying to export this policy of lockdown, which was only used in China.
And you, millions of bots. Like, this was not a small thing. So, So let me just blue sky with you. Actually, maybe I'll go to a break first because I want a blue sky. But think about this while we're on break. So we have a timeline, right? Sort of. And we have a series of connected events, but no explanation for what was really going on. So let's take a break. And when we come back, I really want to blue sky with you a bit about what actually could have caused these things to happen. So this Trish Wood, you're on the Fringe. I'll be back with Michael Senger in a moment after we sort out the bot lockdown timeline. Back in a moment.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Well, that was quick. In the titanic battle between Liz Truss and a head of Tesco lettuce, lettuce emerged victorious. You know, I love British slang, and perhaps the best coinage of recent memory is shambolic. And nothing describes Liz Truss's tenure as UK Prime Minister better than shambolic. It was a complete and utter shambles from beginning to end. She fired her Secretary of Exchequer. She fired her Home Secretary. She fired everybody she could for the high crime of implementing her policies. This is the biggest black eye, not only on the Conservative Party, but on the UK's parliamentary form of government they've ever had. So good riddance to bad trash. Conservatives, nominate somebody like Maggie Thatcher, please. We're begging you. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
A former federal election official called the $400 million plus that Mark Zuckerberg spent to finance the local elections was a carefully orchestrated attempt to influence the 2020 vote and recommended that all states ban private funding of election offices. Hans von Spakovsky, a former Federal Election Commission member, said the billionaire Facebook founder's donations to a pair of non-profits that provided funding to nearly 2,500 counties in 49 states violated fundamental principles of equal treatment of voters, since it may have led to unequal opportunities to vote in different areas of a state. This allowed the conversion of official government election offices into get-out-the-vote operations for one political party and to insert political operatives into election offices to influence and manipulate the outcome of the election.
Bringing the credibility of the TNT Radio Network directly to your device with news updates every 30 minutes, Monday to Friday,
and on the hour on weekends.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, everybody. Trish Wood here, back with Michael Senger, and we're sorting out the origin of the lockdowns. He's done a ton of research on that and a ton of research on China. But I just saw this in your during the break in your piece you did on the early lockdowns in Sierra Leone and Liberia in 14 and 2015, I didn't realize that there was also a zero Ebola campaign, like zero COVID. I mean, it's nuts.
So, isn't that creepy? Hashtag zero Ebola was what they used in 2014 for the lockdowns in Sierra Leone and Liberia, a country with no internet access. So this is essentially, you know, someone outside of Sierra Leone and Liberia hacking reality within those poor countries of those poor people, getting them to accept this policy of lockdown.
And all of these same tricks were used against us. So my question to you then is what? I mean, China doesn't care if Sierra Leone and Liberia are using lockdowns or not. So what this, I mean, I hate to say it, but there must be have been a conspiracy of some sort. So is this like World Health Organization or what is going on?
So China's goal, especially under Xi Jinping, you know, for decades, China had developed this influence network within Western countries. This goes all the way back to when Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon first opened up China in the 1970s, and we re-engaged with China. You know, we thought China was changing, but it turns out that the Chinese Communist Party was simply co-opting, just gradually sort of co-opting all of our elites, you know, politicians, business people, media entities, anybody who had any sort of
basketball
connection with
players.
China, they all became intertwined, and the two systems became intertwined. The Chinese Communist Party is not confined to China. It originated in China, but it's really the world's most broadest international organized crime network is really what it is. So those, and this is all basically invisible. You know, they were gradually getting the world to accept, you know, the lies that came from the propaganda machine in fields like human rights, economics, science. But you couldn't really see it day to day. If it was having effect on our policies, it was tough to say what that was. But all that comes to a head in early 2020 when suddenly Xi Jinping snaps his fingers and the entire world adopts this just horrifically murderous totalitarian policy of lockdown based on the lie that came out of China's propaganda machine that this two-month lockdown of Wuhan had eliminated the virus. So you go back to March 2020, the entire world implements this policy of lockdown based on what China says they did. And for me, as you know, a statistics person, somebody with a forensic and legal background, I want to know on what basis they did that. And so I'm going on just like searching for anybody out there with a platform who's researching the influence of the Chinese Communist Party on these policies that were, quite frankly, turning the world into China. And that was the scariest moment for me, because so I looked for anybody with a platform, you know, journalists, officials, professors, celebrities, anyone with a platform who was looking into these policies in the Chinese connection. I found none. And that was absolutely terrifying to me. There were just none out there.
Is that because everybody who could be doing it is conscripted somehow, or how? Why would?
Exactly. Why would people, it's all those. It's indirect layers upon layers of financial connections to China. You know, Xi Jinping lays down the jackboot and says that nobody can question this lie that we limited the virus. And you know, then you see the New York Times and you know, other big publications, major health officials. Everybody connected, you know, everybody who is central to power within the response to COVID, the more central they are to power with regard to the response to COVID, the more likely they are to repeat that lie that China limited the virus by shutting down Wuhan for 2 months. The lie that they're not allowed to, you know, call out. So, and then everybody connected to them, everybody connected to those elite power structures, however many degrees of separation there are, they stay silent as well. And of course, we see what happens when somebody speaks up, you know, whether you're a celebrity who depends on social media for your livelihood, you're part of a professional organization, or a corporation like, you know, Nike or Apple, who are obviously very deferential to China because they make all their money there, you're forced into silence. However, you know, connected you are to that power structure and that financial power structure. So it's really the indirect influence of the Chinese Communist Party running through our own elites here in the West to maintain those financial relationships with China. And it's extraordinarily disturbing, because that's exactly the conditions that we saw you know, during German rearmament. Why was that being hidden from public view that the Nazis were building this massive military machine? Because our own elites didn't want us to know about it, because their own financial ties to Germany until, oh, you know, Hitler started blowing up all their properties. So then, oops, you know, we got to go fight. And we're seeing same conditions today.
Yeah, no, we are. But I guess my question to you then, and maybe it's a stupid one, but it's an obvious one, is, so what does China get out of having us locked down in this way? What is the agenda there, beyond the obvious of doing us some kind of, you know, economic harm? But what do you think the motivation is behind it?
Right, exactly. And so there was some sort of economic harm, but correct, that was just sort of a tertiary goal for the Chinese Communist Party. There's no question that China's economy grew in 2020 while the rest of the world was set back. And so getting ahead of the rest of the world economically for a very competitive regime like the Chinese Communist Party, that's a goal in itself, but that's not really the primary goal. The primary goal is ensuring the survival of the Chinese Communist Party. Now, for somebody like Xi Jinping, you know, extraordinarily hawkish dictator, absolutely hates the Western world, sees all of Western values, Western enlightenment, human rights as just propaganda to discredit the Chinese Communist Party. And he said that very explicitly in his own writing. You go back and you look at, you know, the writings of the Chinese Communist Party since Xi Jinping came to power, and it's extraordinarily disturbing. He sees all these concepts of human rights, independent judiciaries, democracy as threatening to the future of the Chinese Communist Party. He doesn't think those two systems can coexist. But, you know, he also believes that he'll never be able to get the world to like China or the Chinese Communist Party. So given that the world will, you know, he feels always resent China and the Chinese Communist Party, what is the goal? The goal is to turn the rest of the world into China. So there's no real difference between the rest of the world and China. So the rest of the, there's no reason to oppose China or the Chinese Communist Party anymore. So there, he develops this policy, builds on this policy of unrestricted warfare, that through means such as disinformation, through co-opting elites, through legal warfare, and you know, a lot of people think that fentanyl, the importation of fentanyl from China is a part of this, just turning the rest of the world into China. And we saw that, you know, it's all very, very gradually through the influence of the Chinese Communist Party, until we saw it in a huge way in early 2020, when the entire world adopts this policy of lockdown, which had no precedent in the Western world before Xi Jinping's lockdown of Wuhan. So by insisting on the lie that the lockdown was just so gosh darn successful that you eliminated this virus from all of China by shutting down one city pretty much, that's a very rapid way of all of a sudden, you know, really weakening the concept of human rights. Because now, and that's really the most dangerous precedent that's been set by lockdowns, even worse, arguably, than, you know, all the hunger, all the hardship, the mental health crisis, everything we've been through, is that they've established this norm just all across the world that science is just whatever the elites say it is. That even if it doesn't affect, even if it doesn't actually save any lives, you know, that was just an innocent mistake. It wasn't even in the pandemic plan. We don't have to follow the pandemic plan or whatever science was before. Just whatever the elites say it is, even if it, you know, kills people, even if it goes against dispensary rights for no reason, good reason at all, even if it goes against all the principles of the Western Enlightenment, just follow it. In that sense, that was a very rapid way to turn the world into China, is that the elites have that sort of absolute power and absolute, you know, lack of accountability. Because if you can implement a policy knowing that it was going to kill millions of people, and be completely insulated from the results of that policy, the policy does absolutely no good, but it, you know, is murderous for millions of people, then how could you possibly be held account for anything?
Well, you know something that's very interesting. It's so interesting that you would say that. I had dinner a couple of months ago with someone who was kind of a quasi dissident. She'd grown up in part of China and now is here. And we were talking, and I wasn't really equating what was happening in the West with what was happening or what had happened in China during the Cultural Revolution, but because I just don't see it that way. I do now because she convinced me. But, you know, we were talking about the sort of the trans extremism and all of these other insane things that are being foisted upon us. Illogically and irrationally, I don't understand the hyper-focus. I mean, look at Biden had a trans person at the White House and yesterday. I don't think he's ever met with women who are in a violence against women group. You know, why are they pushing this stuff? And what she said, it was quite, she said, this is what happened during the Cultural Revolution, that these things that are destabilizing us, it's happening for a reason, because we know, you know, taking your kids to a drag show when the drag queen is performing sexually, and it makes it puts you off kilter. It's so bizarre you can't even believe what you're seeing, what you're being expected to accept, right? And she said that is what happened during the Cultural Revolution, and she feels very strongly that that is what we're seeing now. This same kind of fealty to obscene and bizarre things that are destabilizing people deliberately.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question the Chinese Communist Party stokes a lot of that, you know, that those bizarre policies and bizarre narratives in the Western world. And, you know, a lot of that is through their networks and through disinformation. You know, a lot of times they, it's especially galling with the idea of, you know, stop Asian hate, which is, you know, good on it. Obviously, you know, that's a good idea on its face, that, you know, we shouldn't discriminate against Asian people. But they wrap themselves, the Chinese Communist Party loves to wrap itself up as being China, representing all Chinese people, and this is their official policy, you know, just like the Nazis, that, you know, they represent all Chinese people wherever they live. Even if you're a third generation American, you're still belong to the Chinese Communist Party. They wrap themselves up as all of Asia. And so we saw that in the initial days of COVID, is there this big campaign for Stop Asian Hate. And it was just so galling because they're obviously just using that to insulate themselves from any criticism during their response to COVID.
Well, yeah, you know, so where it was coming from. It was coming from Nancy Pelosi. I mean, remember when...
You get the Democrats really picking up on all the Chinese Communist Party lines. It's really pathetic to see.
I think maybe when Trump stopped flights from China or Wuhan or something and early on, and there were actually Democrat politicians running around, and she was one of them, saying, going to San Francisco's Asian community and saying, well, come here and have dinner because what the president's done is like the worst thing ever. You know, I mean, it's just completely, well, obviously the politicization of COVID-19 was dire and extremely harmful, but also it was just sort of a bizarre, obviously nobody should be mean to Asian people, but that's not what was going on there, right? It's just crazy.
And seeing Western elites and Western media, you know, pick up the Chinese Communist Party's narratives, just all the time is just, it's really telling about how much influence the Chinese Communist Party has over our own leadership class. And that's really the big takeaway from all this. The most urgent message is just that the response to COVID was extraordinarily illuminating about how much influence the Chinese Communist Party has over our own political narratives here. It's a really alarming amount because I don't think any foreign power, you know, certainly in American history, has ever had that much influence over our own political narratives to be able to get us to adopt these policies that are just completely antithetical to the interest of the citizenry, like lockdowns. And so I go back and I start researching, you know, every single one of these policies, and you find China's paw prints on, you know, the origin of every single one of these policies, you know, ventilators. Again, there was that mad rush for ventilators, both in Canada and especially in the area around New York. Everybody was trying to get ventilators or ventilating two people at a time. A study later came out. Unfortunately, a grassroots movement put a stop to that process after just a couple months. But in the meantime, a study later came out showing that over 97% of people who have been put on ventilators, who are over age 65 and were put on ventilators in accordance with that initial guidance, have been killed. Over 97%, so essentially
big
a death
mistake.
Sentence.
Big mistake.
You were 26
big
times
mistake.
More likely to survive if you were not put on a ventilator. And
did you see that video
that
of Kyle?
Came from? It came from the World Health Organization based on what
China
said they did in Wuhan. And every single
and
one of these policies. Yeah.
No, I was going to say.
Every single one of these policies, you know, mass testing, the idea of asymptomatic spread, forced masking. It's all just come straight from China based on what they said they did in Wuhan.
See, this to me is so huge. I mean, it's such, it's so big, and it's really, it's like trying to hold on to Jell-O because there are all of these stories, like you have a big piece of it but at the end of the day, it's still, you know, you have trouble wrapping your head around it. Like, I know what you're saying about the ventilators. I remember seeing that first video from Kyle Cameron Sidell, that young doctor who came out of, one of the New York hospitals. And he said, we're killing people. Ventilators don't work on people with COVID-19. They don't have ARDS, or they do have ARDS or something, but they'd been misdiagnosing the lung problem it's just like ridiculous. And you could see that he was ashen-faced because he went public with the idea they were actually killing people with vents, right? Like, it's
exactly.
the enormity of what we've just been through, Michael, is it's almost, I feel like it's the biggest thing that's ever happened in the whole world some days, right? Like, maybe not as big as the Holocaust, but not as big
as
Holocaust.
Yeah, well, as I say on the
alone,
cover of my book, you know, it's the greatest crime of the 21st century to date, no question about
it. Yeah, I know. And the likelihood of us ever being able to wrap our arms around it in a meaningful way is very slim because, you know, and you know why? They were very clever. The media was complicit in this being pulled off, and they're not going to now start asking for accountability from people who they were sucking up to and supporting during the 2.5 years the rest of us were struggling. We have only a minute left. And so what I want to do here is just find out from you first where our audience can find your writing. How can they find you? Substack?
Yeah, absolutely. On michaelpsanger.substack.com. That's where you can find my latest articles. And then definitely check out my book on Amazon. It's now the best-selling book on Amazon about the dictator of China on Amazon, Snake Oil, How Xi Jinping Shut Down the World. And that really lays it all out. The greatest crime of the 21st century. And we're living through it. And, you know, it's just all, it's all being covered up by our own elites due to their, because they know that when people find out about it, I'm confident that the truth will eventually come to light when this current leadership class has eventually been shuffled out of power. They know what the public is going to be absolutely, you know, enraged at how this has been, you know, kept out of the eyes of the public, that every single one of these policies just came straight from China, and what that says about the motivations of our leadership class.
Well, and not just that, but they were policies that really harmed people. Michael Singer, thank you so much. I will have you back. I could do a whole day of interviewing you. So thank you so very much for what you do. Okay, bye-bye.
I really appreciate it.
Okay, so this is Trish Wood. My other show is called Trish Wood's Critical. I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to be in Bedeque, Nova Scotia at the Free Speech and Medicine Conference. What an important event. Jay Bhattacharya, who's party, all kinds of interesting people. So thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you soon and have a great week. Bye.